You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So it's all for play for still.
I think so. Do you want to bet against us?
Hi, villains, and welcome to For the Love of Paul McGrath podcast again. I'm back in my office. I'm back in my
studio. Yes, let's pretend we're very professional. I'm back in my studio.
Back at the ranch.
I'm back at the ranch again. And I'm certainly not in the back in the smoking area of Mike DePuy's pub where I was last time you guys saw me. That was a long night, believe me. It was a long, long night. But back in the land of the living again, and delighted to be back here to chat about this upcoming Everton game that we have at the weekend. And you know, Paddy, it's just another leg in a really kind of difficult September that we have upcoming. And but I genuinely think this is something we can get points from this weekend.
Well, you know what, I haven't seen Everton play this season, and they played Monday night and I was playing football, so I completely haven't seen anything from Everton this season. So sat down today to look at, you know, what, how they've been getting on and whatever. They've played, four matches, conceded 3 goals. They've won the 4 of them, haven't they? Or they drew at Everton, 5 matches.
Everton drew at themselves.
Sorry, they drew at Leeds. Beat Southampton, beat Brighton.
Yeah,
beat Bournemouth.
They haven't really played anyone. Look, Leeds aside, really, but they haven't played anyone that's caused them too much hassle this season yet.
You just don't know what you're going to get with Everton. You don't know what Everton is going to turn up. They're without Dominic Calvert-Lewin, definitely. I'm informed.
For sure. Yeah,
not necessarily a good thing, but look, it's you're going to have Richarlison and whoever else in there to give you a lot of trouble. But look, they're a good solid side so far this season, and it's not going to be a walk in the park for me. And I think it'll be particularly low scoring.
I don't. I think
history will tell you it never is. But
no,
I think this time it could be.
And like Everton is such a difficult team. Like, you know, we always play good games against Everton, as in the games are always, there's always something mad that happens in them, whether it's late goals or whatever. You know, we just go back to the Ashley Young goal. You know, every time I see Aston Villa versus Everton in the fixture list, I just can't help myself from thinking about that goal. And I'm sure there's many, many, many people like that are in exactly the same boat. But like, you look at like the previous 6 meetings, it's been 2 wins for them, 2 wins for us, 2 draws. You know, it's very evenly matched. It's the It's the longest standing fixture in the top flight of English football, if I'm not mistaken. Aston Villa and Everton, and it's also the Kazoo Derby as well. So there's so much going for this game. This is a historic game at the weekend, but I think there is going to be goals. I know you like we can't defend anywhere near like we could last season. We just don't have the ability to do so. And I think the league itself isn't a defensive league anymore. It's an interesting one. I was having a discussion with somebody today, and I think more and more teams are setting up to just score more goals than the other team. And I like if you look at Man City have given up on keeping clean and wanting to keep clean sheets. They want to go and score 5 or 6 goals a game. Liverpool started this trend, you know, with Sané, Salah, and Firmino. Just go and score tons and tons of goals. United have strengthened massively at the top of the pitch. They just want to go and score tons of goals. As have Chelsea, just gone and strengthened the top of the pitch to score tons and tons of goals. And that's why there's no point in the middle teams just going out and playing out 0-0 draws and 1-1 draws and whatever. I think both of these teams are going to go for it. And I think that was one of the reasons why Dean Smith probably looked at our formation and went, our formation previous to the Chelsea game and went, you know what, we're not creating chances from play. He changed it around, came up with a deadly game plan. Granted we lost 3-0, but we got 18 shots away from home in Stamford Bridge. And look, it might just be a small sample size, but I think both teams are going to go out there and try and shoot the lights out.
I think it might be, that could be the case, but I don't think Everton have the firepower that Chelsea have to go and score 3 goals on us. I don't know what their big chances was or, you know, in the game. I only anticipate it was a couple more than what they actually scored. So, you know, when you've got players like Lukaku and obviously us making life easy for them as well, for their other goal, these are going to add up. So I don't envisage we're going to make them mistakes at the weekend, and I don't envisage that Everton have the firepower to punish us if we did. But it's an Everton side who are in transition under Rafa Benitez, and so far he's done a particularly good job. So for that reason, I'm still a little bit sceptical of whether we can go and win it or not.
That's another thing as well. Rafa Benitez is just suited to the Premier League. Just what he does just works in the Premier League. Fantastic manager. Been linked with him before. Like, is he past his sell-by date? I think I've probably been accused of saying that. Not accused. I've probably been guilty more so of saying that before. But I think that, like, what he does, their signings at the summer were Damari Gray, who's just banging goals in for fun, and Andras Townsend, who scored an absolute worldie at the weekend. Yeah. You know, and it's just, he's just a good coach, Benitez. But I think sometimes what happens is, you know, some people call him egotistical. I don't know if that's the case, but sometimes he just doesn't stick around the clubs long enough to have that long-term success like he did in Valencia or Liverpool. But like, he's formidable tactician, and you know, we're going to be playing against him at the weekend, and I think Dean Smith is going to relish the challenge of getting in there and going toe-to-toe with him on the touchline, just like he did with Thomas Tuchel. And like, it sounds stupid and it sounds pretty mad to say it, but like, last 3-0 at the weekend, but Dean Smith won the battle on the touchline.
Well, I know we haven't had an opportunity to talk about the game at the weekend, but I can safely say that Aston Villa have never lost 3-0, and I've got up off my seat and went, that was a good performance, and being proud of how they played. And I can safely say that's never, ever, ever happened before. Well, with the exception of maybe Liverpool in the FA Cup last year. I think that's about the only time anything like that has happened for me. They were just phenomenal. I was just so enthused looking at it. I'm a lot more optimistic having watched them lose a 3-0 win. And I never imagined I'd be saying those words ever in my life. But I think everybody will agree that, you know, it was just a phenomenal performance. And the one thing that, you know, when I was looking today, there's a website I use for injuries, you know, and I found they're missing Calvert-Lewin. They're still missing James Rodriguez, who I believe is COVID or is...
He trained today, but he's not going to be
fit enough. No, he hasn't trained in 3 weeks or something. So he won't be playing. And Fabian Delph is out, which is probably no loss to them. But from our point of view, it's looking like it's only going to be Trezeguet and Chukwuemeka who are carrying the injury, providing we have everybody Davis back. Well. Sorry, forgot about Davis. So providing we have the two guys back through the correct channels through Croatia and back in training, which I presume is the case at this stage, given the fact that we're over 7 days since they were in Brazil. So we'll find out soon enough, I've no doubt, but we'll have the there we go.
Yeah, Pierce was on the ball.
Wow.
Just a few hours before kickoff. Well, a few hours before kickoff could be 8 a.m. in the morning or whatever. Look, I think Emi Martinez plays. I don't think Buendia gets back into that midfield anyway. I don't think he does. I don't think he'd drop any of those midfield three.
If they play the same system as they did last week, which they probably will, I think that team won't change at all from what we saw starting that game last week. But apart from the goalkeeper, I think that's a no-brainer to bring Emi back in there. He's just a calming influence on the team. Not that Jed did anything particularly wrong in the game. I'd agree with Piers there. Definitely Martinez will be in for me. Buendia will have to fight for his place now after heading off to his travels to South America.
Let's take a couple more comments there before we go back to chat more about it. But here's one from Humber Digital, from Ronan. First game of the season, I'll be heading over to see, all the way from Cavan. Looking forward to a great day. A few beers, a pie, and Villa win 2-1. Yet to see Villa lose live at Villa Park. Get him over there more often.
There you go.
Let's GoFundMe is being set up as we speak to keep Ronan in Birmingham for good. I hope you enjoy it.
I reckon he could operate Homeboard Digital from Aston. What do you reckon?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, I hear the internet's good over that side. Probably better than Gavin. I'm sure it's sure to be better than Kevin. But fair play to you. Listen, look, I'm as jealous as all hell. I won't get over this side of Christmas, I don't think, the way things are going. I hope you enjoyed the day, and I hope your prediction comes true, because I think this could be any score really at the weekend. I really, really do. Ed agrees. If we win, you need to stay over there to the next one, and so on, so on. Exactly. Matt is going over as well. This has been my first Villa game since we beat Brighton 2-1. Is the team here about Lucky Charms going over to this game?
I hope so.
I'm liking it.
I'm just raising it. It's not my first game. I'll have to wait another few weeks.
Yeah. When did you say you were going over again?
Wolves.
I have you. Wolves. You did. You're going to be over there for Wolves. So we'll have a team sheet tantrum from outside the stadium with our roving reporter, Paddy. Which will be great crack. Ed says as well that Rafa has definitely got it. Has definitely got them organised. I agree. I think the three at the back suits them as well. Yerry Mina and Ben Godfrey and Michael Keane. Ben Godfrey's a fine player. Not everybody's cup of tea. Some people don't like him at all, but I really like him. I think he's got an awful lot this game, Ben Godfrey. And he's somebody I think that matches up really well to Ollie Watkins at the weekend. And without spoiling what I have a hot take for how we're going to set up this week, remind me to mention that again, Paddy, but I think that Ben Godfrey is their ace in the pack at this weekend against the Aston Villa team. Tombo says, tough game, the first time we might see the plans for the team this season. Yeah, actually, we've no injuries. Yeah, you mentioned that, Paddy, hardly any injuries. This could be the first time we see what Smith actually envisioned for this team.
Yeah, well, I know they're not injured, but we probably still have people who are fighting back to fitness as well, as we say. But I can't imagine Philogene Badeis is going to be up to 90 minutes or even off the bench if he was in a boot a few weeks ago. But look, we can only wait for what Dino says tomorrow. But it's as close as we're going to get to seeing our best squad. And who knows? Maybe they'll all be ready for next week when we play Man U, and then we can judge it then.
Yeah, and like, I wouldn't be surprised to see the bones of 100 million of talent on the bench either. But, one way or another, I think we'll definitely have two 30 million pound players plus Bertrand Traoré on the bench. You know, like, we are this year where Everton were 2 years ago. And that's to put this in context. 2 years ago, Everton went away and they blew a lot of money. And these players are still in their team at the moment and in and around the fringes. They bought Andre Gomez. They bought Ducouré. They bought Bernard, who's gone. They bought Iwobi. They spent tons of money. Like, I think they spent, this was like 28, rising to 50 million on Iwobi.
Like, crazy stuff. You'd probably expect to pay it this year, the way things have gone, but at the time, absolutely crazy stuff.
Yeah, it was in and around that. They weren't the exact figures, but I remember at the time it was eye-watering stuff. Like, and but the funny thing is, whenever you hear any of the Everton players ask who's the most skillful player in training, every one of them to a man will say James Rodriguez or Alex Iwobi. I watched the thing recently on Everton. It was kind of like a teammates thing. And more of them said Iwobi than said James Rodriguez. But it was probably about, I think they asked like 15 players. It was probably about 9 of them said Iwobi, 6 of them said James Rodriguez. And you just wouldn't think it to see him. But apparently he's supposed to be a solid, solid guy, real good teammate, and supposed to be like a proper street footballer in training. But just doesn't translate onto the field in games, yeah. You know,
and we've all played with players like that in training that are world beaters and put them on a pitch on a Saturday and they just don't cut it. So it's just one of those things. And you know, I did actually have a little bit of a snigger when they signed him for 30 million. I thought it was absolutely crazy for a guy who never really cut it in the past to be paying that amount of money. But then when you think about it, we did something similar with the likes of Wesley and Bailey, who we don't know what's going to come from him either. So you have to take risks too. But yeah, it certainly wouldn't have been a risk I would have liked Aston Villa to take.
No, you have, well, not back then anyway, but you have to take, you have sometimes take a punt on athleticism as well, because like Iwobi's a big, like you could give Iwobi 6 weeks training and throw him into a heavyweight boxing match, you know? He's just an athletic freak and a genetic freak, and he's fast and he's got a powerful shot and stuff. It's just sometimes tactics just aren't his thing, and playing in a tactical realm like that, playing on the wing, you need to be able to go both ways in the Premier League. Like, so that might be his thing, which is strange. But Gaz Oak says Buendia probably won't start. The 3-5-2 will probably stay. No, I don't think Buendia starts. I think he'll be on the bench at weekend.
I think this might be the 3-5-2 will stay. Especially against the bigger sides or the perceived bigger sides. So I reckon he'll play it this weekend with Man United and Chelsea in mind over the next week, and Spurs the week after. So it's about perfecting it now. It's similar to how Everton will line up as well. So you kind of have to go like for like if you've got that in your armory to do it, which we have.
Pierce says Ings and Watkins to start as a pair up front again, or do you guys think the one will be dropped and both Bailey and Traore come into the team? Can't see us keeping the back five. Go, Paddy.
Well, as I said already, I don't see any change. Call it a back five, call it a back three, whatever it is, it worked at the weekend. It gave a whole lot of rope to Douglas Luiz, which I enjoyed watching. He didn't have to sit as deep as possible. As a result, it strangled Chelsea in midfield. So I enjoyed that bit. I enjoyed John McGinn being absolutely world-class. He was absolutely brilliant. For once, I agreed with Graeme Souness after the match, saying how good John McGinn was. He was absolutely outstanding. Jacob Ramsey, probably his best game for the club. I don't say that too lightly, because he's been great in all but the one game we played him on the right wing in the end of last season, if memory serves me correct, where he was kind of lost. So it just gave a license for those guys to go and play football, that we know Douglas Luiz can play football, because he knew he had the safety net of having those guys behind him. Albeit we did concede the fourth goal probably because of it, but the likes of Chelsea will punish you like that. Will Everton do it? Probably not. So I envisage that we'll try and perfect this back three at the weekend.
He goes, my hot take, Paddy. That's why I let you go first. So I couldn't. I wanted to keep it to the end, but my hot take is going to be that Danny Ings doesn't start this game, and that Bailey starts it, and that we go with a pacey two. We pick up with a pacey two up front, and that Bailey almost plays up top. And I think that the back five or back three, I don't think it's a back five because of the way the Target and Cash play, obviously. But I think that the back three is here to stay for as long. Well, I think that we're going to experiment with it a small bit more because Dean Smith knows we need a defensive, need a bit more steel in midfield. I don't think we could get the defensive midfielder we needed. I don't think that we wanted to just go out and buy any defensive midfielder. Mm-hmm. I think the defensive midfielders we wanted, we will either go back and get in January. And people may say, that's mad. Why not push on now? Because I think everybody at the club knows the score. And I think that they know that this isn't the push on year that they always wanted. Like, if we get there, fantastic. But I think that, and there'll always be pressure to better last year's result. But I don't think that this is the year that after selling Jack, that they were going to just push all their chips into the middle of the table. I think they're willing to wait for the player that they wanted. The back three is, I think, stays in place. Could be 100% wrong, but I think the back three stays in place. I think they're three very good footballers. They're three footballers that complement each other. And I think the target and cash going forward is very, very important. Dean Smith called Bailey a striker when he first came into the club. And not one, not two, but three occasions called him a striker. We've played him on the wing in a 4-2-3-1 previously. But I think that we will see him play up top or closer to up top in this game, should I say. And I think we could see Danny Ings not start this game just on the basis that with having Yerry Mina and Michael Keane up there as well as Godfrey, Godfrey's going to follow around. Watkins is what I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's just better to have somebody in there that's a bit more pacey because getting in between the two boys, because Godfrey plays in the middle, which is really strange to see a marker play in the middle. But I think that if we have someone else pacey up there, that could cause them awful consternation. Now just sit back and watch me to be horrendously wrong on Saturday because Dean Smith doesn't change his team. But that's why I was alluding to at the start where I said we'll have £30 million players on the bench, but we will one way or another. I don't think that Bailey starts. If Ings starts, I don't think Bailey starts. I think if Bailey starts, I don't think Ings starts because I don't think he's dropping Matt Target or Matty Cash to bring in any new fullbacks if he does play with the 3-5-2 like he did last day.
Barring we pick up any last minute injuries, touch wood, that's not going to be the case because we fucking had our fill of them now at this stage. I don't see any changes. I would be actually pretty annoyed if they changed it because it was just a joy to watch last week. I thought we were phenomenal. And, you know, we haven't got into it in any great detail, nor are we going to because it's in the past at this stage. But it was really, really, really good to watch. And, you know, people going all in on Mings this week, you know, just remember that all those mistakes come from what happens in front of them. There's loads of mistakes all around the pitch. It's just unfortunate. And look, we all know he lacks a little bit of concentration there. Tell it like it is. But don't go all in on him because it wasn't his fault that we lost 3-0 there the other day. That definitely wasn't the case. It was his fault that we probably couldn't get back into the game. It probably just tipped the game, just be honest. But as far as I'm concerned, when we're picking a team, Tyrone Mings is one of the first names on the team sheet, albeit I'm perfectly within my rights to say it was a brain fart. It was a fuck up.
Yeah.
Get over it. Move on. You know, we're lucky that we've a really good goalkeeper to come back in there who probably would have been better positioned to come and get that. And that is the mitigating factor in the whole thing. Ball probably could have been played a bit different to Mings in the first place. So there's a lot going on there. But again, Mings was just caught a little bit short in his thinking, in my belief. And he put his hands up and accepted blame. And, you know, there will come a time where we'll have to say, well, you know, you can only say sorry too many times. But for me, he's first man on the team sheet.
Yeah. I'm not going to really get into the Mings thing. People make mistakes. We're not all fallible. It was a high-profile mistake. It was a shit time just after halftime. And it really killed our momentum. But I think you mentioned something very important there, that if he passed that ball back to Emi Martinez, not having a go at Jed Steer, it's certainly not Jed Steer's fault or whatever, but Kovacic is really fast and Steer wasn't that fast off his line either. But look, put the ball into Rose if you're in two minds.
I'm absolutely sure that Mings was or Jed Steer was told to play it safe as well. There was another occasion there was a ball played over the top, and I've no doubt in my mind Emi Martinez would have been 25 yards out clearing that, whereas Jed Steer was waiting on it to go into the box and giving us all a fucking heart attack. So yeah. I said it at the time that was obviously the case. He was told, look, stay to your line and let the lads do their job. So as a result, that probably caught us out.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, nobody can sit there and say, oh, no, I don't think it was his fault, because nobody's saying that. We're just saying that, look, fuck it, shit happens in love and war, like, and what can we do about it? We can sit here, we can give out about him for the next 34 games, or we can just get behind him and see how far we get up the table. You
know, yes, yeah, but as I said, there will come a time where apologies aren't going to cut it, you know.
And that's a fair point. Very fair point.
And it has been a case where every time he makes a mistake, he's been absolutely phenomenal after it. He just needs to keep it that way and try to limit those potentially game-changing mistakes, and that's the be-all and end-all. But at the end of the day, there's a load of players in front of him that allowed the ball to get there, and that's the problem.
True Magpie One is a villain in Killarney. Loving the show, lads. Like Paddy, I'm really enthused after Chelsky. Greetings from Killarney, or greetings from Galway and from Limerick into your... I presume you're in your house or in your sitting room or wherever you're watching this, but wherever you are in Killarney, lovely to have you along. that's Kevin and Killarney we have so far.
I can only guess there's a GAA team in Killarney called the Magpies. I presume it's not a Newcastle reference if he's here.
No. He's watching a Villa fan cast. He's not going to be a Villa or a Newcastle fan. And even you're still more than welcome. Yeah, I was on a Leicester one today for whatever reason. Earlier on at 6 o'clock doing match predictions for the weekend. It was actually good crack. The boys were eating pizza. See, the boys had a pizza sponsor. I should have asked them, what's their secret? Leicester Fan TV or something they were called. They were sitting inside in the pizzeria getting free pizzas on their way to go and watch Leicester and Napoli. Yeah, free pizzas and beer. And here's us two plonkers sitting at home inside in our studio, in our office, Neil. It was the opposite way around. It's not allowed to call it an office. Studio, be professional. See, that's why we don't have sponsors. Fuck's sake.
Neil, the day will come where we'll broadcast live from a pub with two juicy pints in front of us.
And
it might get a little bit messy, but we'll have a bit of crack doing it. We'll do it. When all this shit comes to an end, that's what will happen.
Exactly. Dean, good to see you again, man. Very excited to see the lineup formation and bench. Finally, lots of viable options. Absolutely. I 100% agree. And options is the key word here. Didn't have him last year. Didn't have him the year before. Didn't have him for the first four games of the season. We have him now. So let's see how we use him. We're seeing
the fruits of many years of heartache of watching players getting injured and not having the backbone there to step up. And we've got such a strong underage setup that if something does happen, we have the likes of Ramsey, Carney, Philogene Bidais, Kessler, Hayden, whoever it may be, Hayden Lindley, Mungo Bridge, all of these players are there for a reason. And plus we've bought players and we've bought quality. So there's genuine reason to fear now what we bring off our bench, which is fantastic. You know, someone said to me today about Amwer El Ghazi. Amwer El Ghazi doesn't even get anywhere near the team the way it is at the moment. And that's crazy to believe that he scored so many goals last season. That's why I don't agree with you with Danny Ings having scored two goals. I don't think he'd be dropped. But anyway, we'll see what happens in the team sheet tantrum.
Maybe so. Yeah, maybe so. I just think tactically it could be something that maybe they look at. Maybe he doesn't drop like they did take him off last week. They took him off. And maybe there isn't too much to read into that, but it's definitely something that I think they might look at, should I say. What else have we going on here? Guys? I'm in the wrong page anyway, first of all. Good point from Ed is I'd like to see Sanson at some point. He's almost like a new signing. Still don't know what his role is in our midfield.
I will make a prediction that we will see Sanson next Tuesday night versus Chelsea, and that will be his first start of the season. That's what I can see is on the way for him. And it's the perfect game to bring him in and see where he's at. So I don't think we'll see him until then. Might get a fleeting 15 minutes at the end of this. We'll see.
Maybe so. I potentially he could be so we might even see him over Buendia. Considering their press players up top. You know, we can play Sansa in the 10 position, like another McGinn, and press like mad with him as well. If we needed to bring on a player to do that at the end of a game, we could see him. Yeah, for sure. 15 minutes. But like you said, I think we see him next Tuesday night against Chelsea. Dara, good to see you, Dara. my old friend, Darryl Grady, fellow street footballer. I've always found it easy to check. Yeah, all those, what, I'm going to say 422 games for Ballingarry AFC. Some going. I'm going to say you did it 422 times. If I've pulled that number out of the top of my head, I deserve a pint the next time I see you there. Because that'll be some kind of Rain Man shit that I've done there if I was able to pull your appearances out of the back of my mind. Great to see we've such a strong bench this season. Plenty of options depending on how the results go. Absolutely, Elliot. Elliot agrees with the options. Yeah. 100%.
100%.
Kahuna Gaming, good to have you on board, man. We're going to be doing something fun later on, I think, over the next couple of months. Which will be a bit of crack. I won't ruin the surprise, but it might involve a Limerick man and a Cork man managing against each other at some stage later. But just to kind of throw that one out. There's loads and loads of stuff there. Loads and loads of comments in here. Paddy, I've got a quick one for you actually, just on, I suppose, I'm going to say on the, and the reason I'm kind of asking you this is because as some of you may know, Paddy has his UEFA badges. He has UEFA badges. I'll put it, he has his UEFA badges. Makes it sound like you have it all the way up to the pro badge. So no, he doesn't. But we've brought in a couple coaches, and so far we've already seen Aston McPhee wasn't here a wet week, and we were launching the ball in from Matty Cash and drying it with the towel, and the towel became the 12th man. And you know, we've seen that, and that's something I want to talk about as well in a moment. But Danks has come in. And I saw somebody had a comment there about it. Unfortunately, I've lost it in the mire of all the comments there. But Danks has come in and we've changed formation and we've got 18 shots on target. And you hear then during the week that he's had one-on-one sessions with Caleb Chukwueke. We've had other players. You know, he's been working with them as well, mm-hmm. that he's brought up into the squad. Tim Igor. Tall Timmy, we'll call him, because he's a big boy. He scored a banger of a goal against, I think it was against Norwich, for the 23s during the week. He's been working with him as well. It's kind of interesting the way that the club are playing this. It's very much becoming a case of, you know, we know our like Dean Smith is there to coach the defensive side of things, and we've got Shakespeare looking over the the majority of everything there as well. And then we've got Danks and we've got Aston McPhee. So I suppose my question, Paddy, is how quickly can a coach's effect be seen?
Oh, very quickly. Very quickly. You know the way you often see an initial, so say a manager gets sacked and a coach comes in straight away and you see an initial hit that some players have just warmed to them and changed their game and upped their game. And that can happen on a regular basis. You know, you've seen, like, people always tell you, I know a couple of players that have played under Sam Allardyce over the years. He's an excellent man manager. So he comes in and tells the players exactly where he sees their strengths being that they're not coming to, and he brings them to that level, and him and all that backroom staff work together and change that. Now, I'm just using Sam Allardyce as an example. You know, that... You look around, I actually find it phenomenal. If you look at the likes of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he's nearly alone on the sideline for every game. Mm. Never interacts with anybody, which, if I was a United fan, that would frighten me a little bit. I just think, well, maybe the players are just drilled that's the way they're going out and that's not going to change. Who knows? Maybe they just have too much talent that they don't need to talk to them during a game. We're on the other hand, are an up-and-coming team, and bringing in a guy like that. I saw on one of the social media today, was that him behind Bailey taking a shot with his right foot? Did you see Tim? That today? It was him, yeah. So
Tim, Tim or Chuck Michael?
Bailey. Bailey was taking a shot with his right foot, and there was a
Yeah,
there was a post on, I think it was Twitter, the Aston Villa Twitter today. And it looked like Danks was behind him. It was hard to see because it was kind of fuzzy behind him, but I presume that's who it was. So he's already working on stuff with the big boys as well, boys who are perceived to come in and know their stuff, you know, 30 million pound players. So Yeah, to answer your question in a nutshell, you can see that very quickly. And all it takes for him is to pick one player, change something about that one player. And if you were to ask me who that one player was last week, it was John McGinn.
Yeah, but John McGinn, what John McGinn did last week is it's not something that we haven't seen from John McGinn. And I'll say it until I'm blue in the face. John McGinn, this is his fourth year with Aston Villa. The 3 years previous, John McGinn has played three separate roles, three completely different roles to the year he's played before. He's done it. I've done a statistical analysis of it. It's the heat map analysis and stuff like that. It's up on our YouTube page if you want to go back and watch it. But the big thing that we're seeing from John McGinn now is he's been given a bit of freedom. He's been given a bit of freedom in the middle of midfield because Dean Smith has said that he's our best player. He's been our best player this season, should I say. Like, we all know what John McGinn can do. We see him do it for Scotland. You know, I know he went in that scoring spree for Scotland before the Euros. But McGinn is he's very highly thought of as a footballer. You know, people you see it on social media a bit more about him not having any impact in the game. Yeah. But he's an absolute, I can imagine he's a dream to play with if you're a teammate of his, because the amount of work he gets through and what he needs probably is a small bit of direction and to be kind of reminded of, yeah, you don't need to cover every blade of grass in a defensive capability, trying to make up for other people's mistakes. And I've said that before. That's probably my biggest criticism of him is that he runs around, which is great, and I don't want him to stop that. But what he does is he's always the man that's there in the position where someone else should have been in, trying to save the day. And I'm torn because you want him to save the day, because if he saves the day, he's a hero. But at the end of the day, he's probably sacrificing something from himself and from what he's supposed to be doing. Like, you'd never see Ronaldo sprint back and save a ball or sprint back in like where McGinn was when Ismaïla Sarr crossed the ball in for, can't remember whose ball it was against, Dennis probably it was against Watford. McGinn was there because he was breaking his arse to get back there and make a beeline. Like you'd never see a lot of top midfielders. I'm not going to call out Bruno Fernandes because you actually might see him there, but you never see a lot of top midfielders do that. And maybe his selflessness at times puts him in a position where he's there to be criticized. Why didn't he get a block in it? You know, he got back there. Yeah, yeah. You just have to run in 55 yards and flat out pace, you know. So there's always context to a lot of things with McGinn, but on Sunday we saw him play in a lot more kind of a controlled manner and he ran the show inside there. Could you imagine if we had someone like a Kovacic inside there with McGinn? The way Kovacic played the weekend, you know, you couldn't tell the two of them apart, other than the fact that Kovacic slid a true ball into one of the best strikers in the world and he profited on a poor pass back from Tyrone Mings. So it swings and roundabouts, I think, in that aspect. And I'm glad you mentioned John McGinn there, and I'm glad that you brought him up in that aspect with regards to the thanks, because I never really thought of him in that instance. The thanks could have had a positive influence on him that way.
Yeah. Well, I think himself and Ramsey, they were the two that I saw playing without fear, and literally playing without fear. You can from time to time see McGinn shit himself that he may have lost the ball in a situation and he, as you say, busts his gut, run 50, 60 yards to win it back. That shouldn't be the way it is. He should have someone, and there was enough players in there behind him, probably against an Everton that would have been able to cover it. Against Chelsea, probably not. But it was an absolute pleasure to watch John McGinn at the weekend. And that's the John McGinn that, he was the last game I saw him play with that kind of intensity was ironically the day he broke a leg against Southampton. He was absolutely buzzing around the park. The referee should have given him a free kick, buzzed out to the sidelines to win back the ball and ends up breaking his leg.
He was winning back out of temper, wasn't he, as well? Yeah. Like he was
completely the referee's fault for not giving the free kick in the first place. But that was the last time I saw it. And I worried that we wouldn't see that John McGinn again. But it just goes to show he's I'm not going to say slim down a little bit. He just seems to have worked on his fitness. I can't see much of a difference in his physique, but I can definitely see a difference in his intensity. Maybe COVID helped him.
Maybe it did. Maybe it did indeed. A couple of other pieces here. Actually, I prepared something. Here's a little something I prepared earlier. Shit, completely forgot all about this, guys. Let me just take this. And this was to discuss how Everton set up last week. Sorry, I suppose the positions that they took up more so than how they set up. Talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, Mac Collins there suggested he can't see Everton playing three at the back. They actually took off one of the central defenders last weekend. It's a good point. So
These are the positions that they picked up last weekend. 22 being Godfrey, 5 being Keane, and 13 being Yerimina, picking up these positions here. So yeah. It was the three at the back last weekend. I know that these two boys are sat up on top of each other, but this is the predominant positions that they took up. So it was a three at the back. And just like I don't see us changing our three at the back, I don't see them changing their three at the back either, considering that it's it kind of worked for them at the weekend as well, you know. So it'll be an interesting one. Look, you know, as I see, even if they play only two at the back, who do they bring in there? They bring in like their two wing backs to be who? Luca Dean and Seamus Coleman, maybe on the right. Who else do they have? I can't even think of who else they have to play on the right. Or maybe they play Ben Godfrey on the left and Luca Dean on the right, you know. So one way or another, I think that they'll have those three players that started at the back in there somewhere. I think the person that this is the way they set up. I think the person we really need to look out for as well is Doucouré. Had a super start to the season, has a load of assists. I think it's 3 assists already. Doucouré in there. My old mate Andre Gomez with the world's best hair. What a haircut he has. What an unbelievable head of hair he has, should I say. He's going to be in there, I would imagine.
That's Alan, isn't it? Alan sitting in front of the back three, I think.
That's Alan. Doucouré is there. I can't remember which one is Doucouré. Richarlison, Damari Gray, Andreas Townsend. So like they will have firepower up there. But I suppose I'm always more when I'm looking at this. Every Premier League team has good strikers. You know, every Premier League team should have firepower. And I mentioned it at the start of the podcast that teams have figured out that, you know, you need to score goals. Yeah, look, further down the league you go to like Norwich with Timo Pukki and Josh Sargent. You know, Timo Pukki has been a shadow of himself this year, and Josh Sargent isn't exactly a name that rolls off the tongue for a lot of people, but it's interesting, you see, as I said, that when we're playing against teams that are like the likes of Everton, who are in fourth in the league, and I think somebody made a point there a moment ago, the second highest scorers in the league this year.
Yeah,
you know, it's good. That's why I think there's going to be loads of goals in this game, because I think we're going to score on their back four or their back three, and I think that they're going to score goals too. But let's bring up how Aston Villa set up last week, because we're almost in unanimous agreement that Aston Villa are going to play similarly or the same way that they played the last day. And what we can see here is, I'll bring it up. Here we go. So we had Tuan Zebe playing through the middle, Bings out left and Cans out right. Douglas Luiz slotted in right there in front. Which this is a nice little bank of people here. I like this. Cash probably a small bit too high. I think potentially I would like to see him back a small bit further. Same with Target. But then again, are we looking at a five at the back? Maybe this is more profitable here, because when we look at it, it's almost a straight line, holding a line across the middle here of four. So realistically, I suppose you could look at it at Mings left back, Kanza right back, Douglas Luiz and Tuan Zebe in the middle. Then you have a bank of four and you have the two boys up front. But the way that the team sets up here with Ings in this position here, that like, you know, if we were to bring in a Bailey in here and swap Bailey and Watkins, it could still work. And I'm nothing against things. I just think that now that we've got options, I think we'll see a horses for courses type of situation. But I don't see Bailey playing out here, even though he did play out there for Leverkusen for a period of time. He did play out there in a Peter Bosch system, which is notoriously difficult, and he takes no prisoners. Peter Bosch, apparently, he's a bit of a I was going to say something there, but he expects lots from his players, put it that way. I don't see Bailey playing out here, and I think that Matt Target is going to hold his position. But it's just going to be interesting with the options that we're going to have inside there. See, McGinn was up very far forward as well beside Ings. That's no surprise to me. But I suppose you could nearly say here that McGinn wasn't really that far forward, but Ings was more withdrawn. into that 10 position, kind of like we expected him to be when we signed him and Jacob Ramsey here. But we're very compact. See the way we're compact here in this instance here. So when we played a four, and I wish I actually had an overlay here of when we played four at the back, we used to set up something similar to this with, there used to be a gap between our two center halves, and it wouldn't be too dissimilar to what we can see here. Mings was probably a small bit further this way. Kanza was probably a small bit further this way. And Cash was probably a small bit further out this way when we played a four at the back. So what we're kind of looking at...
We were deeper than that as well, Neil, I would imagine.
Slightly only. Slightly. Mm. Just based on memory, I think we're only slightly deeper. But what this does is this allows us to pack the midfield where we've had problems. So once again, I feel that Dean Smith knows he needed a defensive midfielder. He didn't go out and just panic buy one because he wants the right one. I think that's very much a staple of Johan Lange as well for where we are at the moment. You don't want to go just dropping 30 million on players that, you know, you're going to have to get rid of in 2 years' time. He wants to build something here. So I kind of like this setup here, and I don't think I think it lends itself to being difficult to break down. Although, I know what people are going to say here. Both our goals came from this side, and that's probably where we are. No, there's a canyon across here. Kovacic's pass was from probably in and around this position.
Yeah.
Just slid it in right in the back here of Tounsebe. And Lukaku came on here. The other one was Mings was cut out more or less in this position. Took him ages to get turned, and by the time the ball got to Lukaku over here, just drilled into the back of the net. So, look, it's not a perfect science here yet. It's not a perfect science at all, but it's interesting to see the way that we set up clogging the midfield, but also having platforms to attack. Unlike a team, let's say, like Newcastle, when we did the statistical analysis, where Newcastle just clogged the midfield and they have no platform to attack at the moment. And it's a really disjointed setup that they have. Although on paper, it looks pretty decent. They just don't have the players to break at pace and to work at the moment. Or maybe the system just doesn't allow them to do it.
Yep.
That's my tuppence halfpenny worth anyway on that. So, Paddy, we're here, we're talking, we're chatting 45 minutes. We'll get to a couple more comments in a moment. Actually, do you know what? We'll get to a couple of comments first. Before we do that, Tara, what would you look at that? It's ridiculous. He had 423 games since Sunday. So the old cognitive decline isn't kicking in just yet. It's not kicking in just yet.
Nice slice of pizza, Dara.
Exactly. Jacob Ramsey was great last week. In a strange way, I like these yellow cards. Last season, he would have been knocked off the ball. This season, he's dragged men to the ground. Couldn't agree more. He's absolutely been a block in that midfield. Mm. And very, very sneaky pivotal player for us, I think, at the moment. Sneaky pivotal player. Elliot says that McGinn definitely benefits in a three-man midfield. Villa look more solid in a three midfield. They look more solid in this three midfield, I think, for sure. Since Ramsey came on against Watford, arguably, you would say we haven't been blown out in any game in midfield since then, arguably.
Yeah.
We've been passive in midfield, but Watford just went through us like a dose of salts at times in the first half. And Ramsey's come in there, and I just think that they're a nice unit together. Saying that, we didn't have two of them against Brentford as well, and Brentford probably played through us a small bit too in the small instances that they were willing to pass the ball forward and pass it through us as well. But
special mention for that yellow card. It was a bloody disgrace. The challenges he let go early on, and he goes and books the Umflo, the easy target to settle the game down. You got to be consistent. Jesus, we've had our fair share of absolute idiots in the centre of the park this season. Anyway, enough about them. They get it over.
Exactly. John Steele fancies us to beat Everton. The Benitez effect will wane. Great coach, but I think we can press their defence to death. Absolutely. And we have form. Dean Smith has form against Everton, don't forget. We have, we always have a performance in the bag for them. I'll never forget Wesley muscling Yerimina off the ball there as the ball was played down the side of their defenders. And I'll say it again, Everton and a lot of defenders in the Premier League do not like the ball being played down the side of them. That's another reason why I would like to see Watkins and Bailey in there, because that's what you need. If you play the ball down the side of players, you need to have pace to get in across them, win penalties. That's how Bruno Fernandes wins penalties. That's how a lot of players, I suppose it's an old-fashioned way of winning penalties, but it still works. And look, hey, if we go there and we win 3-0 and we get three penalties, who's going to complain?
No.
Shout out to John there. He dropped in a present for you, Neil. Just explain. I haven't actually got it to him yet, John. He just with COVID and everything else, but he will get it. I know he kind of said, oh, you can keep it yourself, but no, it's going to Neil. Definitely.
And I know Gaz has given out, Gaz Ox has given out that I haven't got rid of the Grealish picture yet. It still has the X over it, and I've tried to cover his face with a Villa thing, but up there where the other Grealish poster was, that's where John's present is going to go. Right up there. So I'm looking forward to it. Although this whole place will be coming down soon. Within the next month or 6 weeks, I'll be moving into a custom built place. Studio, yes, not office. Studio. Yeah.
For love of Paul McGrath Towers.
Yeah, that's what we call it. Yeah. That's all you gotta do is just if anyone wants to send us a fan mail, just write for the love of Paul McGrath Ireland, it'll get us, don't worry. this is actually a good point. With the investment Villa have made in wingers, I can't see Dean Smith continuing with a back three. Horses for courses, as he said, up the Villa. Yeah. There's a lot of truth in that. There's a lot of truth in that for sure. Mm-hmm. I just wonder, does he see both Traore and Bailey as only wingers, based on what he said before? I think that...
We've discussed many times about the likes of... Bertie playing through the middle and things we'd like to see. That could be the case. But I think there's a lot to be said about what he's just typed there because, you know, as I suggested, I think we'll play three this weekend because it worked so well last weekend and we're just leading up to the fact that we'll probably play three against Man U and maybe against Spurs and then may revert to type with whatever it is that he sees as our long-term formation or maybe he sees that our formation will need to change on a week-to-week basis, on a case-by-case basis, which, for once, we're looking now, what are we, our third year in the Premier League, we're looking at a squad of players with the ability to change that into any formation that we like. As pissed off and all as I was at losing Jack, this is where we're at. And I think in a year's time, when we see the fruition of everything that's going on behind the scenes, when the young lads are coming through, I think Jack would be pissed off and he'd look back and go, I wish I was part of that. Maybe that's me just being a bit mad, but that's the way I feel about it. I'm hoping that's the case. Being a Villa fan, you would think that would be the case, but I think we're about a year away from something special. It may not happen this season, but by the start of next season, I think we could be really onto something.
We better make sure we get the exclusive interview so where he says he's pissed off at the fact that... That he wasn't here, so I better get working on that one.
That'd be nice for them.
That'd be great. Yeah, that'd be great. That's a good point actually from True Magpie. Bertrand in the hole with his trickery and speed of thought could really work. Yeah, I think the one thing about Bertrand is though sometimes he has the ball manipulated or done or passed or shot before he's even taught himself. I think those feet just work by themselves sometimes, which is not a criticism of him, by the way. I think it's something that makes him actually really beneficial to us in the long run because. I think Dean Smith wants that. I think he wants predictability board in the way we set up. Like, we could go out with 3-4-3 at the weekend. You know, we could go out with that. Like, realistically, we have a set of players there that we can manipulate into different formations, as you said, Paddy. And, like, we were talking about a 3-5-2 for ages. Mm-hmm. Not really expecting it, if I was to be really honest. And the next thing, bang. Stamford Bridge. Lads, we're going to go down Stamford Bridge there without our best goalkeeper and Embi Buendia. We're going to play a 3-5-2 and we're going to arguably play the best football we've played all year. So, look, there's a reason why I ask questions about coaches and how they coach and how quickly they can get their message across to players. Let's see what happens at the weekend. I'm buzzing for it. I can't wait for it, to be honest with you.
The modern day coach is working with individuals. It's not just a team yes. effort. They need to be coached on an individual basis. And, you know, we've seen it, we've heard about it, we've read about it this week, and we're going to see the fruits of it. I'm pretty sure we're going to see the fruits of it and fairly soon. And if we haven't already last week.
Exactly. Just we're going to end with Kieran O'Callaghan. How are you doing, sir? Thanks a million for tuning in. As always, great friend of the show is Mr. O'Callaghan. And a friend of nearly, I would imagine, everybody who's been to Villa Park at any stage is probably met Kieran or come across him at some stage. So thanks a million for popping in. That's going to do it, lads. That's going to do it for today. Thanks so much, everybody, for all the questions, all the comments and stuff. We love going down through them. I know I've missed a couple of them there. I'm so sorry. It just went up like a ticker tape at one stage, and I couldn't remember where I finished off. I'm going to be on location again doing the team sheet tantrum, probably from my car, driving this time on Saturday. But don't worry, all road safety protocols will be taken into account. But for the 4:30 kickoff, the 4:20 team sheet tantrum will be just that bit too early before I get to where I'm going. Listen, thanks so much, guys, for everything you do for the podcast. Really appreciate it, you know. Thanks for sharing it, thanks for, you know, retweeting it and stuff like that. And if you want to do it to this to try and get it out there as well, that'd be fantastic. But we'll see you again on Saturday. We'll be back with a team sheet tantrum, and we will be back with a tactical breakdown. I've just had a mental week in work, and to be honest with you, my hangover didn't finish until about 14 minutes before this podcast. So I couldn't look at numbers. I would have got them all wrong.
Before you close everything up there, Neil, just give a quick shout out to John McGinn, who got a bit of abuse at the weekend.
Yes.
Mindless abuse. It happens. It's a name I've been called many times. Does it bother me? Not in the slightest. But is it right? No. Did it bother John McGinn? Probably not. Nothing he hasn't heard before, but no place for it. In this day and age, no place for it. Goes on a bit too often for my liking. But look, that's life. Until these people are dealt with appropriately, we're going to be looking at it forever and just hope that they can. I'm pretty sure they'll find him on camera who was doing this. It can't be that hard. But Chelsea have a history with these things, so I wouldn't be too sure that he'd be punished in any way. But look, if you're sitting around him, name him, shame him, put him out there, because that's the only way this is going to stop.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% well said, Paddy. Well said. Regardless of who he is, you know, he should be made, everybody that does it should be made an example of. No place for it whatsoever. Right, lads. See you on Saturday. We'll be back with a team sheet tantrum. All that's left to say is up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Network. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.